Mike Bailey, a pioneer of the Gulf Coast wine scene and award-winning food entrepreneur.
I know a lot of you wonder what to do with your moon pies. Well, I've got some wine suggestions for you. Lemon moon pies, Sauvignon Blanc, Chenin Blanc, or Pinot Grigio.
Stuart Reb Donald, acclaimed food and travel writer and world-class chef.
I was chef de casserole. I made the casseroles in the frozen food department.
For more than a decade, they've combined their expertise to answer your questions and introduce you to the culinary movers and shakers you want or ought to know. Four-time Taste Award finalists, 13-time Nappy Award losers. They are the dynamic duo of dining. Drop, keep us screaming for more. Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
Why is Boy Ody drinking wine? Why is Boy Ody drinking wine? Why don't you pass that bottle with me? Yeah.
Hey, this is Stu. Mike and I are still in a food coma from Thanksgiving dinner, so we have something a little different planned for you today. As some of you know, I have a YouTube channel called Delta Safari, where I explore all of the great things we have to do here along the Mobile Tensaw Delta. I go fishing, hunting, camping, and all of the great outdoor experiences we have. I also look at the incredible history of the area, as well as taking in some of the great nightlife and dining in the region. So today I'm going to share with you some of the fun food adventures I've had on Delta Safari over the past few years, and share some of the history of our favorite dishes. Now, let's head to the Delta. I have said it before, Dixie is to America what Tuscany is to Italy, what Provence is to France, its culinary heart and soul. Most of the iconic American foods hail from the South. Now, clearly pizza wasn't invented in the South, but did you know that Chicago's deep dish pizza was invented by a Southerner? Former Texas Longhorn football player Ike Sewell is credited with it at his famous Chicago joint, Pizzeria Uno. Look at the recipe for the crust is all you need to know. It has more butter than an Amish market. And as for America's most recognizable sandwich, the burger, also Texas. According to the Texas legislature, the first occurrence on record of a burger patty served between two slices of bread was at Fletcher Davis's lunch counter in Athens, Texas in 1880, 15 years before Connecticut's Louis Lunch opened its doors, and 20 years before they served their first burger. Today, we're going to look at the history of many of the Gulf States' most popular dishes. Swamp soup is a hearty, comforting southern soup that's gained a cult following, particularly around the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Despite its quirky name, which comes from the swampy appearance of chopped greens floating in broth, it's far from unappetizing. In fact, it's a light yet flavorful dish that combines smoky sausage, tender greens, beans, sometimes even pasta, all in chicken broth. It's often described as soul-warming and versatile, perfect for cold weather or as a starter to a meal. It is soul food at its finest. The exact origins of swamp soup are a bit murky, pun intended, but it's rooted in southern cuisine, likely drawing from traditions of using local greens and smoked meats. In Alabama, it exploded in popularity thanks to Fish River Grill, a beloved Baldwin County seafood joint. Since opening, they've branded themselves as a funky, junky, redneck joint and home of world-famous swamp soup, serving complimentary sample bowls to diners. One taste, and you're hooked. It's especially tied to Alabama's culinary scene because of the rope-style smoked sausage. This region is home to some of the finest artisan smoked sausage in the world. Kelly's, Monroe, Conecuh, and Hall's, just to name a few. Locals emphasize that while other regions might swap in chicken or different proteins, smoked sausage gives it that signature smoky kick. Variations abound. Add meatballs for mudball soup, or use turkey sausage for a lighter twist, or incorporate pot liquor, the flavorful liquid from cooked greens, for extra depth. For New Year's, swap the beans for peas and you've got all three good luck foods in one delicious bowl. There are no hard and fast rules for what go into swamp soup other than the greens. It's customizable based on what's in your pantry. If you're in Alabama, head to Fish River Grill for the real thing. Or try making it at home. At its core, swamp soup is a one-pot wonder that's quick to prepare, about 30 to 45 minutes, and even better as leftovers. Just add a little more broth to stretch it over a few days. The base is non-tomatoey and light, avoiding that heavy feeling thanks to the broth and the greens. It's the kind of dish that warms you from the inside out, swamp vibes and all. The Gulf South is America's third coast, and the food that hails from there constitutes the most diverse and iconic menu in the New World. When people think of Third Coast cuisine, one dish often bubbles to the top: shrimp and grits. It's rich, comforting, and found on menus from Charleston to New Orleans. But here's a little known truth. Shrimp and grits isn't originally a Gulf Coast tradition. This dish has its roots in the low country of South Carolina and Georgia, where it was first created by the Gullah people, descendants of West Africans, who merged their culinary heritage with ingredients native to the region. For them, shrimp and grits was a simple breakfast. Shrimp pulled fresh from the marshes, cooked with creamy corn grits passed down from native tradition. It remained largely regional for generations. It wasn't until the late 20th century that shrimp and grits began making waves outside of the Carolinas. Celebrity chefs embraced it, restaurants elevated it, and soon it was on brunch menus across the South. When it arrived on the Gulf Coast, it came with new interpretations: bold sauces, smoky sausage, sizzling Creole twist. But let's set the record straight. If you look at what families along the Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida Gulf Coast were actually eating for generations, you'll find another story. One that's been quietly simmering on stovetops long before shrimp and grits ever arrived. That story is fish and grits. Fried mullet, catfish, redfish, fried bluegill, paired with stone ground grits or quick grits, dressed up with hot sauce or a splash of vinegar and a drizzle of the fry oil. This was the food of dock workers and fishermen, of Sunday suppers and fish fries. Fish and grits was humble, hearty, and uniquely Gulf Coast. Where shrimp and grits was low country fancy, fish and grits was Gulf Coast real. It reflected the rhymes of the local waters, the simplicity of the catch, and the adaptability of coastal home cooks. So while shrimp and grits might be trending today, fish and grits holds the deeper roots in Gulf Coast kitchens, quietly proud, soul-satisfying, and steeped in tradition. And that's a history worth remembering every time you dig into your next bowl of grits. For the longest time, redfish was thought to be too fishy tasting for the average diner. But in the early 1980s, Chef Paul Prudhomme from New Orleans came up with a method of coating the redfish fillets in a whole lot of dried spices and then cooking it in clarified butter over super high heat. And we now know this dish is blackened redfish. This dish became so popular that we almost fished redfish into extinction. And because of that, there's no longer any federal commercial fishing allowed of redfish in the Gulf. And the only state that allows it is Louisiana, but it is under very strict conditions. Gumbo. Just the word conjures up the aroma of simmering spices, the clink of ladles against cast iron pots, and the warmth of southern hospitality. But gumbo is more than a dish. It's a story. A story of cultures colliding, blending, simmering together into something unforgettable. Its roots stretch across the ocean. From West Africa came okra, the original thickener, and the very word gumbo, derived from the Bantu term kinagumbo. The original dish did not include seafood. It was a hunter's dish, usually made with small game birds, not unlike chickens. Native Americans contributed combo, or filet powder, ground sassafras leaves used to thicken and flavor. Other influences included Caribbean spices, chilies, Choctaw herbs, European sausage, and coastal seafood. Finally, French settlers brought their roux, a brown flour and fat base that adds depth and richness. But where did gumbo first land in the New World? The answer lies on Dauphin Island, Alabama. In 1702, French colonists established Fort Louis de la Louisiane on this Gulf Coast outpost. It was here, among the humid salt air and wild marshes, that gumbo made its American debut. French priests recorded the first known mention of gumbo in the New World, describing a communal meal shared with enslaved Africans and Native Americans. That pot of gumbo wasn't just food. It was a symbol of survival, adaptation, and unity. From Dauphin Island, gumbo spread across the Gulf Coast, evolving with every hand that stirred the pot. Mobile, It became a Mardi Gras staple in Louisiana. It was elevated to state cuisine. And today, gumbo remains a culinary ambassador of the South, rich, complex, and deeply rooted in history. Across the Gulf Coast, you'll find subtle differences in how gumbo is served. Most places serve it with rice, but in New Orleans, it's not uncommon to find it with grits instead of rice. And in Pascagoula, Mississippi, they don't serve it with either. They put potato salad on them. So the next time you savor a spoonful of gumbo, remember, you're tasting centuries of resilience, creativity, and cultural fusion. We've got to go sell some stuff now, but when we come back, we'll continue our food history lesson. If you would like more of this content, look for at Delta Safari Show on YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook. If you want to know what Mike is up to, you can always check out his MySpace page.
Mike Bailey, Stuart Reb Donald. Devoted to the complete gastronomic experience.
I want a big butter and egg man.
Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, I hope you're enjoying this crossover between Sip and Chew and Delta Safari. I have a very simple recipe for my remoulade. Sour cream. I know it sounds weird, but it works. Creole mustard, crushed garlic, and blackening seasoning. Everyone who tries it absolutely loves it. But anytime someone from New Orleans tries it, they say it tastes great, but it isn't a proper remoulade. New Orleanians are very territorial over foods that are identified with their city. But here's the deal. New Orleans-style remoulade, though delicious, isn't a proper remoulade. In fact, it isn't really remoulade at all. Auguste Escoffier is considered the world's first celebrity chef. Known as the King of Chefs and Chef of Kings, he was a pioneer modern French cuisine, restaurateur, and culinary writer who revolutionized modern cooking by codifying classical French cuisine. His master opus, Le Guide Culinaire, is a fundamental text that shaped professional cooking worldwide. He was the ultimate authority on French food. His remoulade is the most proper remoulade on earth. It contains mayonnaise, prepared mustard, also known as English mustard, gherkins, capers, parsley, tarragon, chervil, and anchovy essence, which is finely chopped anchovies. New Orleans remoulade contains upwards of 15 ingredients. Mayonnaise, Creole or Dijon mustard, prepared horseradish, lemon juice or vinegar, Worcestershire sauce, minced garlic, fresh chopped parsley, green onions, and seasonings such as paprika, cayenne, salt, and black pepper. Oh, and one more ingredient, the presence of which prevents this from being a true remoulade. Ketchup. Once you add that, you no longer have a proper remoulade. What you have is closer to Thousand Island. More accurately, Thousand Island's southern cousin, comeback sauce. New Orleans remoulade is more at home on a cheeseburger than it is in French cuisine. But that doesn't mean it is not absolutely delicious. It's just not a proper remoulade. You know what's better than crab claws? Fried crab claws. And you could thank Mobile, Alabama for that crunchy little miracle. You see, back in 47, Bill Bailey, same guy who gave us West Indies salad, looked at a pile of discarded crab claws and said, "Why waste it?" So he breaded them, fried them, served them with tartar sauce. And just like that, a Gulf Coast legend was born. Sweet claw meat, crispy shell, and that little handle, perfect bar snack. Perfect appetizer, perfect Mobile. From Bailey Steakhouse to Wenzel's Oyster House, fried crab claws became a staple. Proof the Gulf Coast folks know how to turn scraps into stars. It's not just seafood. It's Southern ingenuity, served golden brown with a little hot sauce. Down in Louisiana, where the bayous hum and the rice cooks slow, there's a dish that doesn't just feed the belly. It tells a story. Etouffee. From a French word that literally means to choke, or in this case, to smother. And that's exactly what it does. Smothers shellfish in a rich, roux-based sauce, then lays it gently over rice like a lullaby. best and most accurate way to describe that sauce is seafood gravy. Now, is it Cajun or Creole? Well, it depends on who's stirring the pot. Cajun style is earthy, spicy, no tomatoes. Creole, brighter, herbaceous, and a splash of acidity. This is often referred to as shrimp Creole. The addition of tomatoes completely changes the flavor and texture, creating an entirely new dish. Legend says it was Aline Champagne at her now legendary restaurant, The Rendezvous, who first popularized the dish in Bro Bridge in the 1940s. A banker tasted it, told all his buddies, and boom, etouffee hit the big time. But historical documents say the initial recipe came from Mrs. Charles Hébert and her daughters, who first served the dish at the Hébert Hotel in Bro Bridge in the 1920s. It's clear that Bro Bridge is ground zero for etouffee, which makes sense as it is the crawfish capital of the world. They even have the Bro Bridge Crawfish Festival, a three-day extravaganza attended by 50,000 people. By the 1950s, etouffee was on menus across the Gulf Coast. By the 1980s, it was a movement, part of the big Cajun food craze of the 1980s. Today, it's a rite of passage. Etouffee isn't just food, it's fusion. French technique, African spice, native ingredients, and Southern soul. One bite, and you're tasting history. Hey y'all, ever hear of a dish called West Indies salad? Now, I know it sounds tropical, right? Like something you'd eat on a beach in Barbados with a rum punch in your hand. But here's the twist. It's not from the West Indies at all. It's pure Mobile, Alabama. Born in 1947 at Bailey's Steakhouse, way out Dolphin Island Parkway. A place so isolated back then that it had no name. But today it has one. Bailey's Corner. Bill Bailey was a merchant marine turned restaurateur. He spent time in the Caribbean soaking up the flavors, and he came home with an idea. Take Gulf Blue Crab, keep it cold, keep it clean, let it shine. Basically, he did a little riff on ceviche. The recipe? Simple. Lump crab meat, sweet white onion, cider vinegar, Wesson oil, salt, pepper, and a splash of ice water. That's it. No mayo, no breadcrumbs, no filler, no cooking. It hit like a Gulf breeze. Locals loved it. Junior league cookbooks picked it up. Seafood joints from Ballabatry to Fairhope started serving it, chilled on a bed of lettuce or with a sleeve of saltines. And you want to talk about how good it is over a juicy ribeye? Man! And the name? Total branding move. West Indies made it sound exotic. But the only islands this salad knows are Mon Louis and Dolphin. Today, it's a Gulf Coast icon, a dish that says, we don't need fancy, we've got flavor, and we've got crab. My mother never cared for West Indies salad, too acidic. So for those who find the cider vinegar too acidic, I came up with a recipe that she loved. One simple substitution. Replace the cider vinegar with unseasoned rice wine vinegar from the Asian section at your local grocer. I find it lets the sweetness of the crab meat really shine. West Indies salad, born in Mobile, raised on tradition, and served with pride. And usually some saltine crackers. They call it the Causeway. A ribbon of road stretched across Mobile Bay, where asphalt meets alligator and seafood joints sit perched above the swamp. Built in 1926, the Mobile Bay Causeway, now officially called Battleship Parkway, was Mobile's first direct link to Baldwin County. Before the Jubilee Parkway, before I-10, this was the only way to cross. Well, it didn't involve a boat anyway. And it's not just a road, it's a corridor of culture. USS Alabama stands guard at one end and a steel sentinel watching over decades of traffic, tourists, and tailgaters. But this road cuts through the Mobile-Tensaw Delta, one of the most biodiverse places in North America. That's why in 2007, they built a turtle fence 3.4 miles long to protect the endangered Alabama red-bellied cooter. I didn't name it, y'all. It's a turtle. Look it up. Locals know the causeway for its food. Steamed shrimp, gumbo, oysters on the half shell or grilled, served with a view of either the glamorous Mobile Bay or the sultry Mobile Tensaw Delta. Don't be surprised to see pelicans by the dozen, and just maybe a gator sunning itself nearby. These restaurants aren't just stops, they're institutions. From the 50s onward, the Mobile Tensaw Delta's nightlife evolved from rustic fish camps and roadside diners into a beloved corridor of seafood institutions. The Sea Ranch and Winslow's brought fine dining to the waterfront in the 60s and 70s, followed by more casual staples like the bluegill. Into the 2000s, spots like Felix's Fish Camp and R&R Seafood modernized the tradition with panoramic views and live music, helping to preserve the Delta's rich legacy. But the causeway is vulnerable. Low and flat, it floods easily during hurricanes and storm surges. When the weather turns, it disappears beneath the waves. Still, it endures. A place where fishermen cast lines from the shoulder, where pelicans dive for dinner, and where Mobile's past and present meet in the mist. The Mobile Bay Causeway isn't just a road, it's a story of connection, conversation, and crawfish. And it's still being written. One sunset at a time. Hey, this is Stu. Mike and I are still in a food coma from Thanksgiving dinner, so we have this crossover between Sip and Chew and Delta Safari. As some of you know, I have a YouTube channel called Delta Safari, where I explore all of the great things we have to do here along the Mobile Tensaw Delta. If you would like more of this kind of content, check out at Delta Safari Show on YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook. If you want to know Mike's top 10 places to eat along the Gulf Coast, we'll run down those when we return. Wait, he still hasn't made that list yet? But it's been 13 years. Oh well, I guess we'll just learn more food history or something.
They are the dynamic duo of dining. Sip and Chew with Mike and Stu. Call 343-0106. Now back to Mike and Stu.
Louisianians are not going to like this. It is a well-established fact that American Mardi Gras began in Mobile, not New Orleans. Well, it turns out the Big Easy's famed Creole cuisine? Yeah, that was invented in Mobile as well. Decades before the city of New Orleans was even an idea, the acting governor of Louisiana, Jean-Baptiste Lamoine de Bienville, petitioned King Louis XIV to send French women to Mobile as brides for the French settlers living there. In August 1704, a French ship called Le Pelican, the Pelican, arrived at Dauphin Island with 23 young women ranging in age from 14 to 19 for the purpose of matrimony. The young ladies, now known as the Pelican Girls, were accustomed to cooking with European ingredients and were dumbfounded by the local offerings. This, along with several other reasons, led to a mild revolt called the Petticoat Insurrection. Enter Madame Langlois, the cook for Governor de Bienville at Fort Louis in Mobile. Bienville placed the Pelican Girls under the tutelage of Madame. She was the first cook to combine the indigenous ingredients of the New World with the techniques of the old. That is why she is now known as the mother of Creole cuisine. Madame created her cooking style and taught it to the Pelican Girls at what constitutes the first cooking school in the New World. Madame, as well as her protégés, spread this style of cooking, combining a Native American menu with European methodology, all along the Gulf Coast, including New Orleans. Like Catherine de' Medici a century earlier, lifting Parisian cuisine from the Stone Age to modernity, Madame introduced Creole cuisine to New Orleans. Now at the time, Mobile was the capital of the massive Louisiana Territory, which stretched from the Gulf of Mexico, or America, or whatever we're calling it this week, all the way up to the Mississippi River into Canada. Still, the fact remains that two of New Orleans' largest cultural attributes were actually imported from modern-day Alabama. And here's the third strike, the first time on record of a dish we now recognize as gumbo being served in the New World was at Dauphin Island, Alabama. Okay, enough of the history lesson. Now let's check out some of the food adventures that I've had on Delta Safari the past few years. Mike Bailey, we are here at Bob's Downtown Restaurant. Never heard of it. Corner of Fat and Happy.
Oh, that place.
Yeah. You even have a dish on the menu named after you. So, yeah, you've been here a time or two. Tell us what makes Bob's so popular.
It's a place in the heart of downtown Mobile. It's got sidewalk seating. on beautiful days, not like today. But
it's brisk.
It's beautiful days.
Or is it? Is today brisk or blustery? Would you say it's more blustery?
Blustery bliss.
Blustery bliss.
Anyway, it's just a great place. That it's like it's a cool place to hang out and see people. All walks of people, tourists coming here. People live downtown coming here frequently. People live out west of Mobile across the bay. They don't come here just to come here and eat breakfast. And it's just a cool little place. Great staff. Probably one of the best staffs of any high volume place like this, because they're always friendly, always smiling, always laughing, cracking a joke. They're just pleasant people. Even the kitchen staff here, believe it or not, is very pleasant. You got one or the other, but here you got both.
You got, yeah.
And they do a good job with everything they do.
And they are open 7 days a week, breakfast and lunch, right?
Yes, they close at 3.
And you can get booze at any meal.
Yes.
All right. So it's a good southern staple.
Well,
breakfast today, I chose the fried catfish and smoked Gouda grits with a side of the alligator sausage. If you spend the day visiting Battleship Memorial Park, you don't have far to go for that post-hike meal. Battleship Parkway is a man-made causeway that serves as the unofficial border between the Delta and the Bay. And for over half a century, it has been home to some of the greatest seafood restaurants in the country. Today, I chose R&R Seafood. It's always casual, in my opinion, the best gumbo on the causeway. Boiled crawfish in season and interesting dishes inspired by the Delta, like the gator tacos I'm enjoying today. Grilled with jerk seasoning and a pineapple slaw, a side of red beans and rice, and to wrap it up, I ordered the dessert special, strawberries and cream bread pudding. R&R Seafood, 1477 Battleship Parkway, Spanish Fort, Alabama.
Today, I'm way off the Eden Trail. I'm at a wonderful family-owned restaurant called Loaves and Fishes in the community of Tanner Williams, Alabama. Tanner Williams is west of the city of Mobile. It's very rural, lots of horse farms and stuff out here, as well as other farms. And this place is really neat. Architecturally, or as far as the interior design goes, you've heard of Gothic Revival. Well, this is more like Gospel Revival. Loaves and Fishes is a seafood place, but it's known pretty much for one thing. All you can eat, catfish. And that's what I'm here for. They're also known for these incredible desserts. Homemade cakes, all different varieties. They change up a lot, but they are absolutely delicious. Another very eclectic thing about Loaves and Fishes is that they never take their Christmas decorations out.
Every dinner starts with some of their signature coleslaw, some fried hush puppies, and jalapeno cheese sauce.
Tanner Williams is an unincorporated community. A lot of land, not a whole lot of people. As you would expect any place, it's mainly farms. But this area of the county is absolutely stunning. And the big draw out here is Big Creek Lake, which is the reservoir that holds the city and county of Mobile's water supply. But it's also where I learned to bass fish. Where we sit here at Loaves and Fishes is actually closer to the state line of Mississippi than it is downtown Mobile, by a good measure. And now the star of the show, the catfish. And they will just keep bringing this until I explain.
Today, I am in Spring Hill Village, which used to actually be a village, but decades ago, it got swallowed up by the city of Mobile. This place is trendy, this place is affluent, and this place is the home of Soul Bowls, which is one of the coolest places I know of to treat yourself. Everything on this menu
is absolutely delicious and decadent, but it's also 100% healthy. Let's check out Soul Bowls. Soul Bowls specializes in two things: bowls and smoothies. And the bowls are frozen and pureed superfruits like pitaya and acai, graviola, and acerola. These are all superfruits, which means they're very high in antioxidants. Today I'm going with my usual, the Spirit Bowl, which is an acai blend, hemp granola, kiwi, banana, strawberry, coconut shreds, and honey. There's nothing in this bowl that I don't absolutely love. You can name every great dessert dish in the world. Cheesecake, death by chocolate, baked Alaska, pecan pie, doesn't matter what it is. I would rather have this than any other dessert on the planet. Plus, this is guiltless. This is 100% healthy. This is one time when you should feel no shame in just having dessert for lunch. I got another place here in Spring Hill Village that I want to show you, and look how close it is to Soul Bowls. Let's take a stroll down the sidewalk here and check out Empanola. An empanada is basically a delicious little pastry pocket stuffed with meats, cheeses, or whatever magic someone felt like hiding inside. These tasty hand pies hail from Latin America, and they are like if Gordon Ramsay had made Hot Pockets. Louisiana is famous for hand pies, especially Nacogdoches meat pies with either ground pork or crawfish. They are the very crawfish pies that Hank Williams referenced in Down on the Bayou. Empanola combines the two. Empanadas can be sweet or savory, and sometimes both. Just check out the variety. Today I went with the I'm Hungry combo, which is three pies and a drink for $14. I chose the beef Argentina, muffaletta, and one to take home for breakfast tomorrow, sausage and gravy. Gotta love the little game room over there in the corner. It's kind of reminiscent of the coffee houses of the 90s. And this place does have a coffee house feel. In fact, they serve really great coffee here too. They're kind of known for it. Most people don't know, New Orleans is the big coffee city in America right now. The muffaletta was stuffed with the ingredients of the famous New Orleans sandwich, Italian cold cuts cheese and Italian olive salad, and it was like a hug from grandma. The beef Argentina is filled with a picadillo type mixture of ground beef, green olives, and a tangy sauce. It was quite good and not too spicy either. I am terribly excited about this place being here. Hand pies are one of my favorite guilty pleasures. And that price point, three pies and a drink for $14. I ate one and a half pie. I was going to finish the muffaletta later. And then, you know, the third one was for breakfast the next day. I could see a couple getting a pie each that they like, a dessert pie, and a drink and splitting it. And both of them eat for less than $15. Spring Hill Village has a lot more to offer. And I'm going to try and hit up some of the other places soon. Till then, I'll see you on the Delta. Aw, man, that's got me feeling hungry. If you're digging what I'm doing here, check out at Delta Safari Show on YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook. It's the same words and music, just with pictures. In the next segment, we'll check out another great place to eat and also hit on some food information, some of it about the dangers of imported seafood. Hey, we're not in the studio, so don't try and call.
I say, a little wine drink of me.
For more than a decade, they are the dynamic duo of dining. Mike and Stu on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Stu. Mike and I are still in a food coma from Thanksgiving dinner, so we have this crossover between Sip and Chew and Delta Safari. Today I'm featuring a new restaurant in the West Mobile area called Bella Italia. It's owned by a good buddy of mine, Alex Fayad. Classic American-style Italian food. Your lasagna, your manicotti, your bruschetta, which is what we started with today. A wonderful mix of tomatoes and herbs and some buttery garlic bread to go with it. I chose to go with the Call 911 Philly cheesesteak, which has jalapenos and a nice shot of hot sauce in it. And of course, the Cajun fries that Alex always serves. And then My co-host Mike got the shrimp scampi. Alex and his crew make every dish to order.
The reason I've come here is to visit a new barbecue place. I have not tried it yet, but it is all the rage here in Baldwin County. It's called Shotgun. We're about to go check it out.
I first heard about Shotgun Barbecue from my co-host on Sip and Chew, Mike Bailey, who heard about it from a group on Facebook called Baldwin County Foodie Group. So I'm here to check it out. Mike had rave reviews of it. Everyone in the Baldwin County Foodie Group has raved about it. So we're going to see what all the fuss is about. I wanted to get a good idea of what their barbecue is about. So I got two of the most popular items, the beef brisket and the spare ribs. And for my sides, I got my favorites with barbecue, baked beans and potato salad. I know you may find this hard to believe looking at my slender stature, but I have judged a barbecue contest or two in my day, and this one hit all of the notes. There was a great bark, good smoke flavor, cooked perfectly. That semicircle when you bite into a rib, that's a sign of a perfectly cooked rib. If it falls off the bone, it's overcooked. And that brisket was absolutely dreamy. Here's a question that I get all the time. Chef, what's the best style of barbecue? And I really can't answer that. And you know why? Because it's a subjective question. What's best to me may not be best to you. But here's my advice. No matter what region of the country you're in, whatever style of barbecue they're known for, get that style and do not compare it to other styles. There are so many different styles and then variations within those styles from town to town. Explore them all. Each one is its own thing. Enjoy it for what it is. Carolina whole hog is nothing like brisket from Texas. But you know what? They're both incredible. So whatever the local style is, that's the best style. Here's a question I get all of the time. Chef, why is it important where my shrimp comes from? Well, here's the deal with the imported shrimp from Asia. This is from Oceana. Number 5, imported farm shrimp can be 10 times worse for the climate than beef. Number 4, local communities in Asia and Central America often suffer when shrimp farms arrive. Number 3, in Thailand, shrimp processing facilities have been linked to human trafficking, which brings us to number 2, trafficked workers in Thailand also catch the fish that they feed to farm shrimp, and number 1, imported farm shrimp can be contaminated with illicit antibiotics. On the flip side, wild-caught domestic shrimp is clean, delicious, and healthy. Plus, it helps the local economy. I've discussed many times the importance of knowing where your seafood comes from. The data about the hazards of Asian shrimp, shuai from the Mekong Delta, and salmon from Chile is overwhelming, but those aren't the only dangers imported seafood poses. Crab meat is a delicacy enjoyed across the globe, and Peru's coastal waters offer a rich bounty of crustaceans. But beneath the sweet, lakey texture of those crab claws lies a darker truth, one that every consumer should know about. Let's start with the bacterial contamination. Like all shellfish, crabs are filter feeders. They absorb whatever's in the water around them. If harvested from polluted or poorly regulated waters, Peruvian crab can carry dangerous bacteria like Salmonella and Fibrio. These pathogens thrive when seafood isn't kept cold enough or is undercooked. The result? Severe food poisoning, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and in rare cases, life-threatening complications. The risks don't stop there. Crabs can also accumulate heavy metals, especially mercury, a potent neurotoxin. Mercury builds up in the tissue of marine life and can damage the brain, kidneys, and nervous system. Pregnant women and children are especially vulnerable. And unlike bacteria, mercury doesn't go away with cooking. Then there's the growing concerns over PFAS, the so-called forever chemicals. These synthetic compounds used in industrial fabrics, firefighting foams, and non-stick cookware have found their way into the oceans. Once absorbed by marine life, PFAS can persist for decades, potentially disrupting hormones, immune function, and even increasing cancer risk. Peru's waters are highly contaminated. Studies carried out by the National Water Authority show the presence of heavy metals in water in excess of environmental quality standards. These include lead, copper, zinc, arsenic, and mercury. At levels this high, they can lead to neurological problems and death. The 2014 ranking listed Peru as having the highest perceived water pollution globally out of 59 countries. Data from 2023 indicates that only 37% of monitored water bodies in Peru have good ambient water quality. To make matters worse, the Peruvian government does not test its seafood for heavy metals. Furthermore, despite testing 100% of U.S. domestic seafood, the FDA physically examines and tests a very small percentage of imported seafood shipments, often cited in recent years as less than 2% of all imported seafood entries. Some reports have put that figure as low as 0.2%. Certainly, crab from Peru can be delicious, but only when safety comes first. U.S. domestic seafood is tested. It is safe. Plus, it helps our nation's economy. So always ask, where does your crab come from? Remember, what's hidden beneath the shell could be more than you bargained for.
If you are a history buff, let me recommend the Mobile Tensaw Delta. The history here is unrivaled throughout the country, second to none. Right down this way, you got Mobile Bay, the famous damn the torpedoes full speed ahead, Admiral Farragut sailing up Mobile Bay. Happened right down there. The last major battle of the Civil War was fought right across the Blakely River there in the historic town of Blakely. You like World War II? Right down this way, about a mile and a half from where I stand right now, is the USS Alabama, one of the heroes of the Pacific Theater. So, if you're a history buff, man, why have you not been to the Delta?
The Mobile Tensaw River Delta is Alabama's largest river delta and wetland, and the second largest delta in the contiguous United States. The delta represents one of the world's richest aquatic environments, with what is likely the most diverse concentration of fish species in the temperate world, and the greatest diversity of mussels, aquatic snails, and crawfish in the world as well. The city of Mobile and the delta are the gateway to much of the nation's most important historical events. From Aaron Burr's and William Bartram's visits early in the nation's history to the docking of the nation's last slave ship, the last battle of the Civil War, the creation of Africatown, and the March for Civil Rights. Mobile is also a city of many firsts, including America's first Mardi Gras. Well, there you have it, a peek inside of Delta Safari. If you're interested in following more of my adventures, just go and check out at Delta Safari Show on YouTube, TikTok, or on Facebook. Now I'm going to go back in the kitchen and see if I can't find a little more pecan pie. And I'll see you on the Delta.
Well, folks, get out there, support local, be local, and buy local.
Yeah.
Support your servers, support your locally owned restaurant. Tip them well, servers earn your tip. And Stu?
Yeah?
What do we do?
Well, I personally, provolone!